At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3 and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches.
As well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Right, guys, here we are, Monday the 12th of December. Apologies, we're a day late with this pod. We just wanted to put out a review for the Eurocross for our main episode this week, because we think, obviously, important race. We love Euros, and it deserves its own episode. So apologies if you were looking for one yesterday. But here we are. This is episode 102. So here we are for second episode of season three. Matt, Eurocross, first off, how did you find it? Did you enjoy it as a spectator?
Well, absolutely. I don't know. I haven't spoke to anyone who didn't enjoy it as a spectator, to be honest. First up, let's probably talk about the course, because I thought it was a very good course. And I think there's been a few courses in the past that perhaps haven't been as challenging as that one. I thought, you know, those little hills, even running it through, we didn't know how it was going to be running through the museum. I think, it, you know, they coped very well with it. All the athletes didn't seem to struggle through there. So I don't think that was a problem at all. And I thought the way it was just kind of steep uphill all the way to the museum, then steep down, and then a little bit on the flat made it really interesting. Any gaps that we saw open up during the race, they would often close up on the downhill or vice versa. Gaps would close on the up and then really extend on the downhill. So it just depended who you were, really, how you liked to race, what kind of background you had, whether you kind of suited the downs or suited the ups. And I mean, first race of the day, let's maybe start there, the under 20 men. I think a lot of people learned a lot from that race. Was heavy favorite, you know, Axel Christensen went off like a madman. You know, he went off so quick, and I know it's 6K. I've heard he does a lot of volume, a lot of training. So he probably almost, you know, scoffed at the thought of running a 6K cross country. We saw him in a senior race at Liverpool as well. But I felt, you know, maybe there was a little bit of lack of respect for the course from him. There was a little bit of lack of respect maybe for the opposition. You got to think the guy trains with Will Barnico. I've heard a few things, puts him away in training quite a lot. Maybe he thought he was going to run away with that victory. And I think that was a course you couldn't run away from anyone on. You had to respect it early. And, you know, like last year, it was quite flat in, you know, in places. There wasn't many things that were going to break your rhythm. This year, those hills, one, they filled you with lactic. They broke your rhythm. They slowed you down almost to a halt. You couldn't. You know, if you were, this is why I thought Jakob was going to struggle, and he didn't. But if you were someone who loves like a nice, strong rhythm the whole way, this course is very hard to kind of cope with that, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. And on Jakob, does that just prove that he's just so far above the rest? It doesn't matter what sort of course you throw on him, that it's not enough of a leveler. I think we spoke on the preview about how cross country sometimes can be a leveler, but I think when you're step above like Jakob is, it's not going to make a difference no matter what the course, as long as you don't run like a complete madman.
Honestly, it keeps amazing me how that guy, you know, I seriously thought this course was going to test him, you know, those hills. And I guess I kind of almost forgot about Lisbon because it was so long ago in 2019. That was a really hilly course. And I think Hannah England mentioned it on commentary and he dealt with that well. But that was the under 20 age group. This was a senior men. And when I saw even Cripper go up the first hill, I thought, you know, he was moving fast. You know, he's very, very light on his feet. And I thought, Christ, he might test Jakob today. But he, at the end, I've watched it back. He looked very comfortable. Very, very easy. I think that's just a testament to who he is and what he can do, to be honest with you. I've never known anything like it. A 1,500 meter runner. I know he's incredible at over 5,000 meters. But someone who can turn up and win a European cross country like that, you know, given his kind of track speed, track pedigree. Look, he said a few interesting things in his interview as well that we picked up. I know that's circulating as around. Lum, do you agree with this? It's more difficult to be in shape for the shorter distances. You just have to be a strong runner for anything 10K and above.
I'd 100% agree with that. And I think I was just about to kind of point that out after what you said. I think what it highlights is it's more impressive when he does it over 1,500 meters. So I think we're seeing that actually he's just a ridiculously good distance runner in terms of your 5K, 10K, even a half marathon, I'm sure he'd run well. He's shown how good he is at that. I think what's impressive now, not that he wasn't impressive before, is how well he performs over 1,500 meters, considering how strong he is and how much strength work he does.
Yeah, we know he's like a little bit arrogant, but in this interview, I was kind of getting the impression he was almost saying, you know, it's easy to be a good 10,000 meter runner in a sense that you just need to put the hours in, put the volume in. And, you know, he said the real challenge is peaking at the right time. And he even went and said, you know, he's got a 3-4 week almost like plan before a major competition over 1500, which he just does, and it works, and it just gets him in incredible shape. And you do have to wonder, because we hear about the kind of mileage he puts in, and we look at him, we like the way he can perform on that cross country. You know, surely he can't go and step on a track, you know, and be running 3:28s, 3:29s, but he does do it. So there must be an incredibly detailed and successful transition period, which turns him into Jakob Ingebrigtsen, phenomenal 10,000 meter runner, 5,000 meter runner, to, you know, Jakob Ingebrigtsen, what he can do over the 1500. And I think he probably doesn't get enough credit for that transition period. We just see him as just almost like a machine, when that is a very, very hard thing to do, because I don't know anyone who's actually done it successfully.
I think the difference of Jakob is this, to the extent at which he does it. I think probably most athletes, within a short space of time, if you're strong, can get to that point. But I think with him, obviously, that point takes you to Olympic gold medal. Whereas for most, it's not the case. I think even, obviously, David Ritson, I think he said this when he was an athlete rather than a coach, but obviously he's coaching now the On Group. Mm-hmm. I think he said anyone, like within sort of like 8-week period, he said, from a strength period of any, for any distance, you can get ready for any race from like 1500 up to 10K. If you've done the necessary base work and appropriate strength work before that, in 8 weeks, you can get to PB shape for any event.
Yeah.
And I'd probably say that's true. If, like you say, you've got the right systems to get you there, and the block you put into to before that eight week point is correct.
I would probably, and I think that is the hardest bit, isn't it? And that's what Jakob was alluding to in his interview. That transition is the hardest bit that a lot of people struggle with. And that's why you have so much depth, you know, in these races, and people who just, you know, we see it probably. I mean, it used to be that kind of 3:40 mark was a breakthrough. You're probably talking more 3:36, 3:37 now. We get athletes to such a high level, and just making that next jump is so difficult. And that period that we're just talking about is probably the difference. So, back to the race. I feel like all the, going back to what the under 20s did, and we saw Christian Sengoff, like about how his mate Lelesso died as well. Christian dropped out. That Rabi, the Norwegian, dropped out. And, I think a lot of people watched that, especially a lot of the seniors, they watched that race and they thought, because then we saw the under 20 women do virtually exactly the same with Fitzgerald. I say, I thought, this is not a course you can go off too hard. And in that senior men's race, Emil Caress was probably, I think it was the only ahead of a few Maltese runners on that first turn. Like it was baffling how far back he was. And Jakob Ingebrigtsen as well. I mean, there was a point in the race where Jakob Ingebrigtsen was, I think his lowest position was about in 20th, when you go on like the lap splits. And that was through the lap count, so it may have even been further back than that. And he went off very comfortable. And honestly, the first hill, I thought he was almost walking. It was like he said to himself, I'm not going to burn through anything on this first lap, and literally almost came to a halt. So I thought they obviously clearly watched the junior races, learnt a lot, you know, the damage those hills were doing late in the race, how they were coming and biting you back. And so the men all went off quite well. The ones who featured went off quite sensibly. And obviously Cripper faded back. Cripper perhaps could have had a slightly better performance had he not have gone off and been forced in the pace, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes into the race. So, you know, words on a mill, phenomenal. Yeah. How good do we think he can be? I mean, Lund, this is one thing I was going to say. We know Emil set all his PBs this summer. I think he's still improving, though. I think he's a better athlete now than he was in the summer. So I think those PBs are going to get, if he does, I think he's going to do a marathon next year, but they'll probably get slashed again.
I think so. And I think, again, though, it's similar for Emil in that he is just I think he's an out-and-out distance runner, and that he will be, the training he'll do, obviously being coached by Canova, he'll be in ready to run PBs from 5K up to the marathon. And then it just depends what he kind of spends that last block doing in terms of prepping for it. So it's whatever he decides to specify in will be where he gets it. But his overall training all year round is going to be setting him up to PB at any distance. So it just depends, I think, what he wants and what's interesting him and maybe what kind of championships he's chasing at the time. I think just on the going off slow thing, it's baffling, isn't it, that we get these kind of elite runners, the best runners in Europe. And if you ask any of them the best way to run a 10 by K session, over hilly terrain, none of them would burn in the first K.
Yeah,
go off too hard.
But yeah, they do it
in a race with the pressure and not wanting to let people go. They all do it. Like, to average their best 10 by K, there's no way they're running their first one quickest.
Yeah, I think like it was the way.
I mean, it's the confidence. It's that confidence that Jakob has, and rightly so. Then it's great to see someone like Emil have it as well, whilst he probably knows he's in good shape, not proven on that circuit at all. And I think we knew he had the potential to do it. I do want to say that I did call his silver medal in our preview ep.
You did.
But I think, yeah, to have that confidence, having not proven it on that stage, I think it's really impressive and it's so exciting for the future. Because you got to remember with Emil, he's not old. How old is he?
24. And it actually surprised me. I thought he was even a little, you know, 25, 26. But yeah, it's still just 24 years old. So, you know, and he's going to be stepping up some marathon come April. He's going to be doing London. So he's, you know, and I look at people who've run, you know, your 210s to 11, and he is far, you know, performing far and above what they were doing in their kind of prime shape pre-marathon. So it's going to be exciting, really exciting to see what he can do. And I think you're dead right about kind of judging that race. Jakob is, there was a point where I think it was Cripper who was kind of forcing the pace a little bit. And there might have been a German up there. And I just thought, I mean, Jakob probably wants to take a little bit closer order. But that is what was really weird about this course is gaps got quite big, but then they just closed up really quickly. But then also gaps got really big really quickly as well. And I haven't really seen that before. So it's almost like you didn't even have to surge at certain points. And gaps would just open or close. You know, on the downhills, it was how you take a turn. There were so many factors which kind of impacted it. So... But there was one thing Jakob did, and I think I want to know if Emil, obviously we weren't there, so we can't really tell if Emil surged when he got that gap on them with about two laps to go, or did the boys ease back a little bit? Because it was almost quite a canny thing Jakob did. Because I think sometimes when you're running behind someone or running with someone and they're pushing, they can really start to sense how you're feeling. For example, if you get a little gap on them up a hill, that's just giving them confidence. And Jakob purposely, I think, backs off. So they can't probably hear how he's breathing. They can't get that little confidence boost of doing him on a downhill, on an uphill, round a bend or anything like that. And you can kind of sense if someone's tiring and they don't get any of that. And then he just comes back and then just starts forcing the pace himself. And I don't know if that was a tactical move by him, sort of letting him go, or it was just still, you know, relatively 15, 20 minutes into the race. But yeah, so I think it was a great event. Senior racers probably wrapping up, you know, the men's performance. Mohamed was 12th. Supposedly that's guaranteed him his world cross spot as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how this world cross team develops now over the next, you're probably talking the next 4 weeks. It's going to be, should be finalized. You know, that's going to be early Jan. That'll be 4 or 5 weeks away from the world cross. So maybe longer, but it's going to be interesting to see who kind of gets picked, because obviously with the women, Jess Judd, Abby Donnelly, both inside that top 12 as well. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see, you know, how that all evolves.
I think it's good as well. Obviously we wanted the Brits to do as well as possible, but obviously if we'd had more than two in the top 12 for either, that would be kind of, it'd be a bit contentious then. I think based off what the selection is. Whereas right now, it just means if Emil and Mohamed and Jess and Abby all want to go, they go. And it's nice and clear cut. And the rest is based off previous cross-country performances.
So, well, this, yeah, you know, Mohamed's definitely going to surely snap his spot up and going to go.
I think so, yeah.
Emil, probably not so much. If he wants to prepare for London, probably not going to see him out in Australia.
I'm not sure, though, because, see, I was thinking that. And then I remembered, obviously, he ran Cardiff Cross the week before running Valencia Half.
Yeah, he did.
And I think he's going to have a lot longer than that in between. I don't think he'll necessarily prep for the World Cross in terms of really specifically, but I could see him doing it.
I mean, I always think, you know, World Crosses, they're only every 2 years now. And if you can go to one, say you've been to a World Cross, it's always it's almost like an honour. And, you know, it is the pinnacle of cross country, really, isn't it? It's always a spectacle. So it would be cool to see him there, because it would be cool to see, you know, what he could do as well. And just see how good that performance was against Jakob, you know, coming second in Europe.
And one thing on that World Cross, I think that's where the difference would be. I don't think Jakob or Emil, like even Jakob, would get away with going off slow at a World Cross. I mean, that's where...
Well,
even on some crazy courses, I just think that that's where the depth gets too good, that there's no room for those sorts of gaps.
Yeah, and, you know, the Africans are so established at going off hard, aren't they? And, like, and coping.
Yeah.
Coping with, you know, tricky... hilly courses, they're so good at that. That's what they do week in, week out, and they're fartlek. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, if it's not a crazy course, though, you know, someone like Jakob could go off quick.
Of course he could, yeah.
He said in his interview as well, he's probably not going to do the World Cross. It's too much. Yeah, we saw him in the last World Cross. That was pretty cool to see him, you know, run that one out in the under-20s. But I was surprised how kind of convincingly he actually ended up winning on Saturday, because I thought that'd be a really testing course for him. So it's going to be exciting to see what he can do over the next few months. Mate, let's move to the women. Grofdau won again. It was actually a really good race between Grofdau and Klosterhalfen. I was actually rooting for Klosterhalfen, to be honest with you. But yeah, they absolutely murked it in the end. The gap was huge. 40 seconds, 45 seconds to third place.
I do think, though, when you look at, I think we said before that they were two that were kind of a cut above. I think this, apart from maybe Khan, I think in terms of like their times they run, they are, it kind of works out right that they were kind of a cut above the rest. I know that's a huge margin still, but yeah, they are the superior athletes in that field.
Yeah, and I think there was, I mean, look, you know, I think Crammy mentioned it on comms. Alina Ray, perfectly judged race. This is where we started to see, you know, people really working through. She did it amazingly, to be honest with you. Comes through for third. Hannah Klein, the Germans, four in the top six. That is, you know, I don't know if GB's ever done that. I can't remember, but, you know, they had two, three and four.
Yeah, not in a senior race, I don't think.
Yeah, clearly got something going on very, very good in Germany at the moment with, you know, developing talent and training and stuff. So fair play to them, to be honest with you. But yeah, I do think there was a little bit of maybe a golfing class. Jess Jard, Abby Donnelly, good runs from them, you know, eighth and ninth. And I think, again, it was just a hard course for them. Abby Donnelly probably raced really well. Yeah. I think Judd may come away a little bit disappointed. But, you know, kind of when you look at who was, you know, first and second, it was probably only that bronze, which is up for grabs. And if you just get
I think Judd as well. I think Liverpool was her first race in a long time since the track season.
Yeah.
So that's got to play a part in it. And she wasn't really tested there. And I believe in terms of her plans, she's heading to the roads anyway post Christmas, so it'll be interesting to see how she gets on there. Ooh, yeah.
Half marathon. Nice, man.
And then obviously track season. But I think she, whose interview was it? Apology, I since someone interviewed her, maybe at Liverpool. I just remember seeing something. She's got a marathon maybe in like 2 or 3 years is the plan. But yeah. So just doing a couple halves each winter and just ticking over. But so be interested to see how she gets on, and I'm sure it's still a very positive performance, and she keeps improving over all sorts of distances over her career already.
I mean, that's what I was going to say, you know, just to drop back to Emil. Is it almost a shame that he's going to be stepping to the marathon? Because the way he's running and competing, could we see like a 13, sub 13, 10, 5K performance out of him? You know, could we see 27, 20, 27, 15, 10K performance out of the guy, you know, on the track?
And I saw you put this in our show notes, and I've been thinking about it, and I don't think it is, because I think we've seen that from Brits already. And obviously it'd be great to see another one in more depth, but what we haven't seen from Brits is competing on the marathon.
Someone blowing that marathon.
Like, realistically, obviously, like Josh Griffiths, great friend of ours, went to the World Champs 2:11 in the summer, cracking run. But we want our top Brits to be running a lot quicker than that. With how the marathon has taken off, besides, like we talk about Jake Smith's potential a lot, and hopefully he can kind of get back into it as well. We want to see people cracking like 2:6.
Yeah, I really want to see him up there.
I think until we see people a bit earlier in their careers, or maybe even our top guys, if someone like, I know Mark Scott runs a few halves, and I know he's got plans for it at some point. It rather than people going there, going to the marathon after they've sort of retired from the track, maybe if a few people went a little bit early. I'm not saying forget the track, because I think, like we say, like with Canova, like with him, I think Emil could definitely still come back and run quick 10K time. It's not like he's going to go to the marathon and then be gone forever. But I think I'd be more excited to see a Brit really attack a marathon and go for a properly like world class time.
Yeah, I think you're right there, to be fair. You know, we have, you know, even, you know, 13:10, I guess maybe that doesn't, you know, it will excite someone like Emil, but maybe, yeah, ripping that marathon wide open, you know, really kind of firing himself onto the scene, running 2:07, 2:08, 2:06, you know, stuff like that. It's probably going to, well, one, his career's going to take off. He's probably going to get a lot more recognition for it. And yeah, it's a kind of event which is quite weak at the moment as well. And I think, you know, in a weird way, when you look at, I mean, you know, when you're an elite 5K guy and you look at it, you're just like, how do you get amongst it? Mm. You know, for example, we have Mark Scott, you know, 12:57. How do you get amongst it? And, you know, fourth, fifth, you know, how do you get those medals at a major champs? And I think in the 1500, we've had guys do it before, you know, and Bar Farah, who I do think is, you know, kind of out there on his own.
Mm.
In the 5 and the 10, you know, it's hard to kind of relate to doing that, whereas I think someone like Emil can probably think, you know what, I can go and run 2:06.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to keep batting on about Canova as well, but look, he's selected Canova as his coach, and he's known for his marathon training and his special block. So I think...
And training very hard, man. You know, yeah.
So to go there is a statement in itself. I'm sure Canova wouldn't take him on if he didn't think he'd have a good marathon in him. It's not to say he's not going to run good on the track, but I think, yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? Because, you know, Emil's 24. How old was Hawkins when he was running, when he was performing really well over the marathon? You know, Olympic Games, World Champs. I don't think he was much older or younger than, I think he was about 23, 24, you know?
Well, he ran Bucks Cross the year he did Rio, didn't he?
In 2016, he did. So, you know, so he was, yeah, he was probably 22, 23, I think, that year. So, you know, you have got to be careful because, you know, obviously Hawkins has had a torrid few years for a while now. Mm-hmm. And really struggling to get back. And, you know, I think that's the
way. As long as you don't start hitting two marathons every year.
And getting that cycle, yeah.
Yeah, of just marathon. And, yeah. But, yeah. But then at the same time, I do also think sometimes we forget that it's hard to stay in the sport for a long time as a full-time pro, given that contracts are so hard to come by. You're aiming your career is to run a good marathon, and at 23, 24, you've got the opportunity to train full-time. Go and do the event you want to do and peak now. Don't, like, who cares if you, well, not who cares, but if you go and run your best performance at 24 and you can still look back on your career and say, that was the time I really wanted, that's great. And I always think this with, I look back at like 2012 when Asaji and Ross Murray obviously made the Olympics, and people think, oh, they were quite young then and maybe they should have kicked on and had maybe more extensive careers, but they made a home Olympics at quite a young age. And I think that's probably still, I don't mean that it would have been the pinnacle anyway. So
yeah.
Shame, because you want everyone to have amazing long.
No, there's no doubt.
There's no guarantees with that anyway. So if you're fit and it's what you want to do, go and do it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, it probably is the right thing for a mill to do. And you've got to take your opportunities at the time. I agree with that, man. So, yeah. So back to Eurocross. We could do a whole episode on Emil Caressi's future. To be fair, we just need to time down and get him on the podcast. Actually, maybe Christmas period is a nice quiet period for him. But yeah. So you know, Grovdal, exceptional. You know, interestingly, you know, obviously, Norway again winning the men's and women's races. I wonder how many times that's happened where you know both the previous men's and women's winners have sort of backed up and done back-to-back championships. But on to, mate, just under-23s. Obviously, Charles Hicks and Zach Mohammed ran away with it, as we'd expect, to be honest, with Hicks. He actually reminds me a lot of Ingebrigtsen, the way he runs.
Obviously, it's great that he defended his title. I'd have just loved to see where he'd come in that senior men's race.
I agree. I do agree. He does just, but like I say, Hicks is really deceiving. He always looks like super relaxed, just like Jakob looks, and he almost has like the same body type as Jakob. He does run like slightly differently, but you know, I just think you can never really tell when Hicks is working and running fast. It's almost like a, and then soon enough, there's just a massive gap which opens, and he runs away with it. You know, so I think he was actually probably the only one of the whole day who got up there at the start and just sat at the front and dictated the whole race. And I don't think we saw that in any other race. You know, anyone who was up there early sort of dropped back, faded a little bit. But I think that was just kind of credit to him just being literally the best man on the day.
And also the most prepped in it in terms of the NCAA races going off ridiculously fast, and that he's been doing that all season. So I don't know. Imagine the confidence you've got. I know there's a bit of fatigue probably from travel and the races themselves, but you win an NCAA cross title, having won under-23s last year.
Yeah.
That confidence in itself must be ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think the boys, yeah, swept team title, Hicks, Mohammed, and Stony as well. Stony and eight. So he's looking good coming in. So I wonder if Stony will stay on the cross or just kind of get some training in, or will he go indoors? Will there be a temptation? I think this is the problem with people like Stony who become good 1500 meter runners in the track season. Because before, there was never really a pressure to see him indoors. Now, will there be a bit of a pressure to get him running indoors, you know, over 1500 early on?
I think the difference with Stonier, I think we said last time that he's probably our best 1500 runner on the cross, and that the other Brits couldn't touch him on the cross. The good thing with him is he's making teams on the cross. Whereas I think if you're normally someone who's a cross runner and you run good track off it, but you're not making GB teams, that's when there's more of a pressure to run indoors.
Yeah.
Whereas with someone like Stonier, he's backed it up and made another GB team, finish well at Euros. That's good enough in terms of ticking boxes of making teams in the winter. I don't think there's as much pressure then to go indoors. Whereas if you're someone who maybe, I don't know, not chugs around, but goes and runs league matches and it gets them strong for the summer, the temptation when you become a world-class track runner is, well, I have to run indoors because I have to prove that I'm still that person and I can't come, I don't know, 10-foot of Gwent League, for example.
Yeah, to be fair, probably agree with that. So it'll be interesting, as you know, we're going to see him at National Cross and events like that. Hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think it's exciting for us. We love cross country, and but at the same time, if he does go indoors, I'd love to see him rip it up too. So we'll see. Yeah. Whoever's going to make him best in the summer, because we know that's the most important thing.
Yeah, man, that summer 1500 meter team. Under-23 women, Megan Keith, good old battle with Battacoletti of Italy. She obviously won it last year as well. So And obviously Millard as well coming in third. So strong team, you know, strong running from those girls. That race was kind of a weird race. And yeah, those two broke away pretty early on. A little bit like the senior ladies race, and there just wasn't not much happened for a lap or two. And I know that's unfair to say, because I think when you're there, a lot is going on. There's a lot of surges and stuff. But obviously when you're on TV, they're kind of just pushing along at the front as well. So seeing as that's her first year in the under 23, she's looking good for the next few years as well, is Megan.
Definitely. And obviously coming from under 20s last year, it is good when people kind of step up to the age groups really nicely. I mean, it's where the under 23s is a weird age group, because some people are, they're ready to be seniors. Obviously Megan Keith would have been in our senior team if she wasn't an under 23, but some people need that 3 years to kind of make the jump. So I think there's still an argument either way. There was one thing we wanted to chat about. Obviously, Ellis Cross ran in the men's race, called up after Mark Scott pulled out due to injury, I believe, or a little niggle or something not being quite right, which I think is fair enough. Like, he's got the track kind of pedigree and the potential as well, to keep improving. That any decision like that in at this time of year is completely fair enough. Ellis obviously had a good run, and more than sort of made up for it in terms of where he finished at Euros, like proving that he's perfectly good enough to be part of that squad. But obviously, there was under 23s who finished ahead of him at Liverpool that I'm not sure whether they were asked. I presume if they were, they'd have been there. So it's difficult.
It is tricky, isn't it? Because I think obviously the senior men, the first reserves were Ellis and obviously Paddy Deaver as well out in America. And yeah, there was two. I mean, you had Jacob Kahn, who missed out another 23 spot, and you had Dave Malarkey as well. Both those guys actually ran in Telford on the same day and probably minus five conditions and ran a solid 10K. But, you know, it's tricky, isn't it? Because obviously, yeah, when you have that Liverpool trial, should we just almost abandon that under 23 age? Well, I was just looking at the women. I mean, they had just a shade over 50 finishers. So it's by far, you know, the smallest field of the day is the under 23 age group. And I think it's tough because not all countries can have really good depth at that age. We do. Hence why I'm pretty sure we clean up every year at the under 23s.
Yeah. So many of ours would make our senior team. So of course they clean up when they go and run in the 23s age group.
That's it. So, but no, super glad for Ellis. I actually think he actually ran really well. He got the call up late. He probably didn't know he was doing it until, I think it was Tuesday, was it, when the news got out. And kind of went there and performed, you know, in 32nd or I think 35th or whatever he was at the Eurocross is a very, very good performance. So, and it's times like that which kind of push you on as an athlete, and he's going to get a taste for it. And now he kind of knows he can be there. He's probably going to be in and around that GB team a lot more now as well. So, but mate, you know, just before we summarize, obviously we mentioned the under 20 men, under 20 women. Fitzgerald looks like a super talent, 16. Whenever someone young does well, are we right to kind of be worried, or should we just, you know, keep encouraging it as well?
I mean, we keep encouraging it. Like, at the start of this episode, we spoke about Jakob Ingebrigtsen, someone who from an extremely young age has been at the top of the level, and he's always sort of started and raced up and up and up, and he's best in the world at a ridiculously young age. So let's support it. Obviously, it's no guarantee. Performing well as a youngster is no guarantee, but I also think it's no guarantee of being successful as a senior, but I also think it's no guarantee of not being successful. It's not, doesn't mean, or you can't do well because you did so well as an under 20 or a 16 year old. So
Jakob won the under 20 age group four times. So, you know, I think she's got another 3 years in there, maybe more. Maybe 4 years left, but it's just so it's, you know, incredibly young, looks like a good talent. And you know, people kind of saying maybe she went off a little bit quick, was that stupid? In my head I was thinking, you know, the race was 3.8k. yeah, these girls, yeah, to be fair, she probably races over 4k week in week out in the league matches, but I was thinking to myself, like, why wouldn't you get after it? Well, you know, if there's one race of the day that you could go off hard, it was that race. You know, and so I don't think she should be disappointed with that run, or, you know, unhappy that potentially she misjudged it. I think the race was so short, that's kind of good practice. And it's good practice for the track. And clearly she's got track pedigree as well, sub 9 minutes for 3K already, which is just, you know, bonkers, man. So that pretty much sums up Eurocross. I thought it was a very, very successful event. I think the only, if there is a downer, I've heard it's been quite hard to sort of get to and get back from. But I think that's more just delays in airports rather than anything. Yeah, and obviously it's in Brussels next year, which is probably going to be really popular just across the border. So, yeah, we look forward to that. And one more thing, Lum, we should probably just touch upon Telford 10K a little bit. So we've had some huge results on Sunday. You know, whilst the Eurocross was going down, Telford 10K results were coming in. It was probably, well, I want to say it was -4, -5 here. It must have been that up north. Icy, snowy. I was actually surprised it was going ahead. In my head, I was like, how have they not? I saw Manchester had snow. So how has it not been called off? But they did a great job.
It's not that north, mate.
Huh?
It's not that far north, Telford.
You sure, mate? It's north.
You look on a map, mate. That's
it's north of the M25. So, but still, I was like, you know, it must be, you know, -5 or
whatever. Yeah. I'm sure it was cold, and we did see some kind of very frosty / snowy sort of conditions from some of the pictures from there. And yeah, ridiculously good results. It's one of the races that always attracts a lot. Interesting one. Matt, did you see some stats as well from Telford?
But the times were obviously electric. Every time, anytime we see fast times on the road, we delve into them, and the PBs were just phenomenal. I mean, 32 men sub 30 minutes. That is just phenomenal running. So huge depth in cold conditions. Someone I just pointed out as sort of saw in results, Ethan Hussey, 30.18. Obviously, we know he's a very good young 1500 meter runner. I thought that's pretty good strength for an under 20 1500 meter guy. I think he's going to be an under 23 on the track, but he was an under 20 at Liverpool as well. So
as Jakob says, that's the easy bit for him. So,
but then the one thing which made me kind of just question it a little bit was, you know, 30.18 Ethan Hussey. where did he come at Liverpool in the under 20 race? You know, so have we got under 20s who are going to run 29 lows on the road? Maybe that's what they're capable of. Yeah, and in the women's, obviously Sam Harrison, 31.12. That's actually track and road PB for her. I mean, we knew she was in good shape after that 15.37 park run, yeah. I want to say. But, you know, she jumped in with the men, rightly so, because I think the next woman was 32 odd. But yeah, and obviously Lepetre and that, Jacob Allen, sub 29 minutes, 28.55, and I think for the win.
Yeah, it's running. But I don't know. What do we think? Obviously, we've touched upon it already, and I don't want to kind of sound like a broken record, but obviously, road times are going to count for champs next year. I don't know, you mentioned it's a PB, it's a track and road PB for Sam Harrison. Is it now better to go and...
to put it into context, I think that's, you know, last year she didn't... last year, I think she was 31.20 high. Let me just double check. She was 31.21 last year, you know, so she's knocked 10 seconds off of that. This is Telford 10K. You know, what are people going to do? We got Valencia 10K in a month.
January 15th, Valencia 10K.
So, you know, surely people are going to go there and really, you know, she's got...
There's a five as well. This is what I mean. Like, you were saying last week when we chatted about Boston, about how go there. I'm not being funny. If you want to go and run the times, run the doors, and you're top Brits, go to Valencia, 5K and 10K. I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, when there's a depth like there is in these road races, I think that's the advantage. We've always said with the road, in a track race, you can only have 15 or whatever on the track.
And you don't have a pack. You do not get a pack.
Yeah, on the road you have a massive pack all just kind of charging along. So yeah, I thought incredible times coming out of Telford. It's going to be exciting. I think the new year is going to be exciting. There's obviously more quick races. I think it might just be what Ribble Valley 10K, which is left. Kind of looking at that. Oh, Battersea 5K. Battersea 5 Mile Friday night. So we'll see what kind of. I think that's relatively strong kind of southern base field as well in that. So yeah, that's about it. Rounding up the weekend, rounding up the big one. We're back with a guest on this coming weekend as well. So we'll kind of do guest to guest again Thursday.
Yeah. And just keep a lookout for some other content. Obviously, follow the YouTube and things like that, because we have some exciting videos coming up. More of that. We won't give too much away. But thanks for listening as always, and we'll catch you next week.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.